Blog Talk Radio.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na banja latu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, kwa malelo lipazulika. Nikale, tinangalapo kondwela. Lelo heka, tutikumbukila kweta chokela. Amai kuputika mutima, kwa mazoti tazisoa. Nimaona misozi masomu wake, ni mafuto avale ni mafuto. Kumowa kudibe ntawio na kubanja kumwana ako kuipirendi kuchitogo na mumufolo hamama inei njiziwanda zota nizi taeza talema na yuma pempelo atika pena siku zina azati kumbukila oye.
It's Friday, October 10th 2014. This is a special feature on Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and good afternoon from wherever you are listening us from. We are delighted that you have chosen to make us part of your evening today. And we have a special discussion today. We are going to be partly continue our discussion on taxation in Zambia with Sombo Chunda, who will be joining us shortly. And then also we shall try to reflect a little bit on the Zambian national budget for 2015, which has just been presented in Parliament a few hours ago. Dr. Munsanje, good morning, or is it good afternoon to you? I don't know whether you got a chance to listen to it. Did you listen to the budget speech, Dr. Munsanje?
No. I was not even aware. I think you didn't do a good job.
Oh, my goodness me. People are going to accuse you for not being a patriotic Zambian. Okay, we are going to continue our discussion on a little bit of taxation, even the issues we're going to talk about in on the budget speech are also going to focus on taxation. And joining us again, we are so delighted to have Sombo Mzata Chunda, who is the country representative for DICONIA in Zambia, a Swedish international non-government organization. And she's going to continue with some of the questions that were not answered last time, and then we'll proceed to... Sombo, good evening, and thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Nessa. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Let's continue from where we left off the last time, because a lot of people wanted to understand some of the things in terms of taxation as it concerns the citizens. So can you just explain to us the categories of taxation that affects the ordinary citizens or Zambians?
Okay. I think Zambians are subject to a number of taxes. I think some taxes, so clear and people are aware of the taxes they're paying, and for some it just passes through your bank account. So maybe if you're not the kind of person who wants to do an analysis of your bank statement, you will not even be able to pick it. So I think of the taxes that we pay, the one most important one that affects every person in employment is pay as you, and it's a payroll tax. Every person who's working and has a contract of employment pays pay as you earn. There is an exempt portion. The first 3,000 is exempt, and this figure has been going up. I think, in line with the PS manifesto, where we say, you know, we're propagating to people's pockets. So they raise this figure up when they came into power. So the first type of employees or people of Zambians pay is pay as you earn for those that are in full-time employment. Then we have value-added tax. Value-added tax is a consumption tax, as you may be aware. So this tax is paid by those employed and those not employed, because it is collected on behalf of the government by companies registered and selling goods off the counter. So if you take a person who is in full-time employment, they go to a shop, say they walk into ShopRite, mm-hmm. and they buy goods that are taxable, then they are going to remit tax. And let's get a person who is not employed. This person doesn't do anything. So when that person walks into ShopRite and purchases the same kind of goods that the person that is employed purchases, they'll also have to pay tax. So value-added tax is paid by both those that are employed and those that are not employed. And the rate of value-added tax is 16%. At some point, I think value-added tax was 17%, or is it 17.5? So value-added tax has a whole lot of complications around it, and I think right now there's a hot debate in the country around Rule 18, you know, which affects the companies, mining companies and mining companies as well, and those in the agriculture. So all that is under VAT. Then we also have withholding tax, and withholding tax is it's supposed to be applicable on rent. This is that whoever is living in a rented property is supposed to represent to the government. Withholding tax on rent has not been administered voluntarily, and I think it's because of a number of you know, challenges. I hope that in our continued discussion as a country, widening the tax base, we're going to ensure that we withholding tax and see how best we can be able to up the tax the 10% coming from there. Other type of tax is property transfer tax. This is on transfer of property. And under the definition of property that comes out prominently, it's land. And this affects things that are selling off property. So if I have land and I'm selling it off to another person, a property transfer tax arises that is charged at 10%, and that has to be remitted to the Zambia Revenue Authority. The other type of tax that Zambians pay is medical, and it is taxed at the rate of 1% on the interest earned on savings or deposits. So this is the one I gave a reference to a little earlier, that sometimes you get taxed and you're not even aware and analyze your bank account. So those people that have interest earning accounts, at the end of the month, look through your bank account, your bank statement rather, you should be able to go to medical levy tax, which is 1% that you have earned from the bank. Yeah. So those are the type of tax we pay as Zambians. But I think it's very interesting to note that, you know, the major contributor to the total tax revenue of the government, you earn tax. So if you try to check how many Zambians are employed that are making that 10%, that contribution to pay as you earn, contribution to the total tax of the country, then you get a shock. Because ideally, it should be the companies contributing more to the tax and not the individuals. So the contribution of corporate income tax is rather low, and I think that should cause a worry to every citizen. Yeah.
Mm, okay. You mentioned all these categories of taxes. One thing I noticed, Sombo, is that we have a lot of trading going on in Zambia. People going across the border, bringing in goods, and people in Soweto market, markets in Kitwe and Dola everywhere across the country. What type of taxes do those people pay?
Yes. Well, I think most of those fall under the bracket that has not been well captured. in an ideal situation, you expect that people that are trading would register to the revenue authority so that they can be able to declare their taxes, be it input or output tax on their trade. But this that we have is that most of the people are not captured for tax purposes. People are supposed to register voluntarily to the revenue house, and it doesn't really take so much time. I think now this electronic system, you can just register as an individual. So then you're captured on the ZRA system. Of course, it would be another discussion to look at. A number of people have access to, you know, smartphones, so which means they can access the internet. So then what is the problem? What is the reason why people have not been able to put themselves up to register for tax? I think that's where the big question is, and that's what we have to be addressing. So people that do trade, and let's say I have my own business, and, well, maybe you should put a business in quotation marks. I go to from Dubai, and I come back, and whatever I sell, as long as I am not registered for tax, I'll not be able to pay tax. So even people that are moving from here in Nakonde, they go to buy things and then they come into their country, they sell, frankly, they don't pay tax because they're not, you know, captured under the tax system. I think the biggest challenge that the revenue authority has right now is to capture people that are supposed to be paying tax, to get people to voluntarily pay the tax, you know, to get people to be motivated to register, to be taxpayers. And I think this has a lot to do with the way we have been oriented. It has a lot to do with the way things have happened in the past. You know, if people enjoy and get free things for a long time, sometimes they start thinking in a particular way. That's just my thinking. And then, because tax is supposed to be an obligation that you're supposed to have as a citizen. It is painful to pay tax, but anyway, you have to pay it because it is part of the social services that you're getting. So it's painful, I think, if I am paying tax and maybe I see that, you know, nothing much is happening in the city where I'm living or in my immediate community, then maybe that's the reason why we have people coming up with all sorts of schemes to run away from paying tax. But ideally, people should be able to register freely. They should voluntarily register to pay tax.
Okay. Kombo, hi, this is Matilda Lucas. I'm co-hosting with Nathan today on this program. Welcome to the
beginning.
So I have a follow-up question on the question Nathan asked you. So what system do you have in place? I know you mentioned, you know, you're going electronic. People can access this on their smartphones and so on. But what about those traders who do not? Or maybe they do have the smartphone, but they don't have that knowledge. I'll give an example of, let's say, the people who make the welders along the street, along Kalingalinga. I saw that the last time I was in Zambia. They make beautiful gates. But there are places, I think it's on Freedom Way or somewhere, those hardware stores, they sell gates like that.
Yeah.
Beautiful kind, almost the same kind of quality. The ones on the, in the shops on Freedom Way or wherever the shops are, they are paying taxes. But the guy along this road, he's charging whatever amount, but he's not paying tax. What system do you have in place to reach those kind of traders?
Yeah, I think currently there hasn't been a system in place for getting people that are selling out to be able to pay tax. And I think that's what I said a little earlier, that that's the biggest problem that we have. I think the revenue authority, they have to find a way to capture the people that, you know, sell gets on the street. Ideally, you know, we're supposed to have a register of all these small businesses. And I am thinking the best way would be PACRA working alongside ZRA. For you to operate a small business, to register with PACRA, the Patents and Companies Registration Authority. Yeah. So if you register with PACRA, at that point, either automatically get registered for tax, that would be the best. Because if you register with PACRA and you now have to go all the way to JDRIA and then maybe you find a queue to register for that, then that brings in a complication. But then if you register with PACRA, if you have access, for example, to internet facilities, then you should be able or you should be advised at that same point to quickly register to JDRIA. And then when you register to JDRIA, obviously, the next thing that comes in is you should be able to open a bank account. So then if all those are interlinked and you obviously provide details of your address, then that makes it very easy for the tax administrator to work through, you know. But what we have now is, I think those people that make gates in Kalingalinga, they make beautiful gates, quality as much. That's an excellent industry that's operating there. The residential addresses of those people. Is it possible to know where this person who comes and stands at the roadside and makes a gate, is it possible to know which home they come from, which street, where they're staying? It may not be possible. I don't think it is possible to have that. So as long as we haven't captured the basic information, the basic data about it, that creates, you know, a problem. It creates confusion. Then people are able to do what they're supposed to do, knowing that nobody is going to trust them. So if we have a system where there are these linkages, okay, you PACRA, your small business is registered, ZRA, you register for tax there and then the bank, if there is, because through the bank, it is possible for ZRA to know how much money is coming into that person's bank account. Then if it is revenue from the business and if they qualify to pay tax, then automatically that person should be able to submit a return at the end of the year.
Right.
So I think, like I said, a little earlier, it's, they have been brought up to think, that's what I'm thinking. Could it have been because at some point certain things used to be for free, so people still think like that? We should be paying the tax, of course not with a smile, because, you know, you're cutting out with some income. We should be able not to find it so hard to pay the tax, because we are sure that once we pay this tax, we're going to drive on good roads. Once we pay the tax, we're going to see, you know, good schools, you know. So as long as you're paying tax and you're not seeing those things, that could be the reason why people are resisting not to register. But I think the revenue house has got a big job, and I think that they need the support from civil society organizations to demand or to get a critical mass, a number of people to register at the office. That would be good.
Wow. Well, Sombo, I see a breath of a new relationship between PACRA and ZRA. You could have a user-friendly relationship where some of the forms can be at the PACRA offices and people who come to register can pick those up. But I wanted to bring you back to the number of the different taxes that are available in Zambia, that Zambians pay.
Mm-hmm.
And you had mentioned the property transfer tax. Do forgive, most of my questions are in example format. So a person has built a house or has bought a house, let's say, they may live in Zambia, they may live outside Zambia. And at the time, after a number of years, they decide to sell the house. Then you find that they say, well, you need to... are your taxes updated or they're paid up? And most of the time, people are clueless. Like, I didn't even know I was supposed to be paying property tax. Is this common knowledge? How are there property taxes to be paid in Zambia? And how are people informed about this?
Yeah. Most of the times when you have a property and you have to sell it off, it is advisable to do the sale through a lawyer. So if you engage a lawyer, a professional lawyer, yeah, then they're going to bring in the aspect of paying property transfer tax. It's different. If somebody has built a house and they don't do the sale through a lawyer most of the time, then ZRA loses out on the income.
Well, help me understand this, Sombo. Like, say, here in the United States.
Just in a big elephant.
Okay, so just help me to understand this, Sombo. Like, say here in the United States, if I have property, which I do, every year I pay tax.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I purchase a vehicle, I have to pay property taxes in order to renew my license and so on. So when it comes to the sale of the house, everything is already in place. But it seems like in Zambia, up until the time you're selling your house, that's when the property... transfer tax comes up, and all these years There was no mention of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it could be a legal thing that may have to be looked at, because if the tax is spread over a period, then the burden becomes less. If
okay.
the tax just comes into play at the moment when it falls due because you're transferring the property, then it could be a high amount, depending on the value of the property. So the current percentage that is being used by the Revenue Authority is 10%. So if you're selling a property worth a billion kwacha, you have to pay the 10% as the transfer is taking place between the buyer and the seller.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Great.
You're good. You're listening to Friday special feature with Sombo Chunda. She's discussing taxation in Zambia. Very shortly, switching to the... we want her to comment on the budget that has just been presented. Sombo, let's move on to something that affects a lot of Zambians who live abroad. What sort of taxes affect returning citizens from abroad? For example, let's begin with a student who's been away for 5-6 years. They come back home. And then you can also talk about somebody who has
mm-hmm.
lived out of Zambia 15, 20, 30 years. What sort of taxes should they expect to pay?
Okay, that is regulated by statutory instrument number 54 of 2000. And if you're bringing goods into the country, be it household goods and personal effects and motor vehicles, there is an incentive that is in place. If you're able to prove that you've been out of the country for more than 2 years, then you're not going to pay duty on bringing in these to the country. But if you're not able to prove that you've been away that long, for example, then of course you have to pay the taxes. For motor vehicles, it's only one vehicle which is allowed to come in together with your other personal effects. And they've got a whole lot of, rules that they apply. If somebody has been away for 2+ years, they obviously have to prove that what they are bringing in was their personal effects before they left the country where they're coming from. So it doesn't apply to, for example, I know that I'll be traveling, then at that same point I buy a motor vehicle. You have to show that you'd had that particular effect for a while whilst you were away.
What sort of proof are they looking for?
I think that would be receipts. So those of you that are away, you have to make sure that you keep the receipts with you, at least keep themselves, so that when you're coming back, you'll be able to show that this particular vehicle has been in use and it is your vehicle, and, you know, the same applies to household goods. I think the reason why they may have come up with this rule could be, you know, not everyone is straight, you know. You could be very patriotic, and when you're coming, you want to do things in a proper way, but there are people that are crooked. They're coming tomorrow, then they get new things, you know. Then those are not things that they've been using whilst they've been away. Those are not their personal effects. And if they bring in those goods, what guarantee is there that they are going to keep them? Because some people have sold off, you know, they've sold off the goods that they buy just before they come. So, unfortunately, I think, you know, laws become punitive because of the few people that haven't done things well. And the same applies to, you know, the exemption that was there on importation on duty of motor vehicles for non-governmental and Christian organizations. Yeah, there was a lot of abuse. Yeah, there was a lot of abuse. So I think because of the abuse, that's how come the Revenue House now just punishes everybody. Whether you are a good person or a bad person, the same rule applies.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's a pity. Let's take a question from social media, Matilda, and then I'll let Titus ask his question. Matilda, can you read the question, please?
Yes, Sombo, we do have a question here from social media from a person calling herself Patriotica, the unpatriotic philosopher. The question, well, there are a number of questions.
Just read one.
How are
Yes. The first question is, how are taxpayers' money spent?
Okay. that's a very good question. The Zambia budget is split into the income part, which, you know, income is the different inflows of money into the national treasury. And when we talk of income, we're looking at domestic revenue and foreign grants. Under domestic revenue, we have got mineral royalty, and we've got income tax, corporate income tax. We have VAT, and we have got customs and excise duty, and we have, of course, pay-as-you-earn falls under income tax, and then we have got what is known as non-tax revenue. And under foreign, there is projects and non-project financing, which comes in. This is money from cooperating partners. That's basically the ways in which money is collected. In terms of how taxpayers' money is spent, I think that's very interesting. The larger part of the expenditure is on the general public service, and this has been the case over the years. As the budget gets big, the amount spent on public service has been going up. So expenditure is categorized into major headings, and under those major headings, there are other expenditures. So in order for a person to know what the money really is spent on, it would be helpful to look at the general expenditure headings and then look at the notes, which should be able to, you know, give an indication of what specific things that money is on. But the largest area's money goes to the general public service.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, so Matilda. There is a question relating to retaining citizens.
Yes, there is a question on the same person returned from the UK and wanted to know about. Excuse me. Just give me a second.
Hello?
Here. I'm here. You can hear me. I'm just trying to read the question. They were suggesting that if you could look at the way the UK citizens pay taxes to the national insurance contribution. Is there such a system like that in Zambia where the taxes can help, where citizens can be looked after paying taxes to lessen the burden on the government?
In that case, I think that's not, that's like a pension scheme. I would think that's what they're referring to.
I believe.
After a person retires. Yeah. I think after a person retires, what we have is we have the National Pension Scheme Authority, NAPSA. All citizens that before they get to retirement age are supposed to contribute 5% of their income to. There is an exemption. There is a percentage of exemption on that, a fixed rate of exemption. So then people make this contribution to the National Pension Scheme Authority. And what happened that NAPSA has been investing that money. It's very clear on, you know, what investment NAPSA has been putting that money to. And you can easily get that information if you work for NAPSA. It's not the way it was years back when it wasn't easy to know, you know, this money that a person has been spending and contributing over the years was going to be there. I think NAPSA is really a transformed institution, and they're actually running a number of businesses. Yeah. So if you're contributing the 5% over your life, your employment life, and you cease being in employment, they'll give you a refund of that money. Yeah. Actually, now really good, because I can go to NAPSA, pick up the phone and call NAPSA and give them my NRC number. Then they will be able to advise me. Well, maybe a phone is not a good example, but if I walk into the NAPSA, then I produce my NRC and I ask for my statement. They're going to print it and it will show all the amounts that I have been giving to the National Pension Scheme Authority.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Then
yeah, it is. Quite a lot of positives, huh?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Excellent. Let's go to Minnesota. Titus, please go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Nathan. Hello, everybody. Sambo, my question is based on the tax returns. As a Zambian, if I bought items 2-3 years ago and I have receipts for that, you guys have money that is revolving, mm-hmm. that is ready for me to remit. I'll give you an example. In South Africa, anything that I've bought around the airport, 3 years, 5 years down the line, mm-hmm. if I get that, the money is right there and I'll be given that money. Now, when we hear of broke government or ZRI panicking over money, I wonder whether that money is there. Mm-hmm. If somebody claims 3 years back you bought something and they charge you tax. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I wanted to look at the area where, diaspora people, we are scrutinized for, did this thing really belong to you or whatever? Have you looked into ministers and politicians, kids that we know for sure their books are not too much rich, but as soon as somebody is minister in 2 years, they are having monies that you can't even imagine. And why don't you follow up on whether they can prove you have receipts, you have pay as you earn, you know, showing how come somebody all of a sudden will be worth 20 billion kwacha and yet they are not making money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why follow on us as diasporans too much, and you have ministers and everybody? One odd man from Western Province is just an odd guy. 2 years, 4 years from now, he'll be almost the richest guy. Why don't you follow up on that, mm-hmm. the tax money?
That's very interesting. And, I could also be on the same side of the argument as you are, because I don't work for the Revenue Authority, but I think ideally we're supposed to promote transparency as a country, and I think we're supposed to have a system for declaring, you know, the assets that people in public offices hold at the time. You gave an example of a minister at the time that they're coming into these positions of authority. And at the time, we could have an annual review where we check, and the Revenue House should be interested if they see that this person's, you know, work has just suddenly gone up so high, and they should be able to have a trigger, you know, system that should be able to, you know, get an investigation of some sort going. It wouldn't be good to investigate everybody just because their net worth has gone up, but I think it would be very important to check through and see if this increase in a person's net worth is genuine, or it's because a person has been, you know, awarding themselves contracts from this construction of roads and all these developmental issues that are going on, and in which case they have to be answerable for things that haven't been done the right way. So I would be on the same side of the argument as you are. You know, a person is owing 500 kwacha, 500 as in 100 knots. Gets followed up, and then a person who's owing so much to the Revenue House is not followed up. So then you start asking yourself, where are our priorities as a country? I think the Revenue House should be able to set priorities where they're going to spend their energies on. The energy should be spent on, you know, where they can get more money. It's a waste of time to follow up a person who's owing 500 kwacha. I'll give you a very practical example. This is a very silly example. Really, I shouldn't even give it. Well, yeah, for some reason, I had a problem with a check that I had written for 577 kwacha 15 gwen. And I was paying it to the Revenue Authority. And the check bounced, you know. Immediately, I was blacklisted. 577 kwacha 15 gwen. Huh? Immediately, I was blacklisted. I continued paying the taxes that followed for the subsequent months without knowing that I have been blacklisted, because when the check went back to the Revenue House, I did not pass through the desk to check where these bounced checks are put. And then my colleague passed through there, and then they were told, oh, you're not supposed to pay through here anymore because your check has been, you know, because your account has been suspended, you're blacklisted, so you're not supposed to bring us checks anymore. what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to pay directly to the Bank of Zambia, you know, through an online system that they have in place. Well, that's good enough. So the next thing that happens is I write a letter of appeal to the Revenue Authority, and really, I mean, credit has to be given where it's due. I think ZRA are really doing quite well in terms of following up. But then I'm thinking to myself, why should they follow up people that are owing 500 kwartas, you know? They should be going for people that are owing serious amounts of money. So I wrote a letter of appeal, and within a day, I got a response. I was removed off the blacklist. So then they say,
wow.
Oh, you have made the payment. I did the online payment. Yeah. Within a day, I got a response. How efficient ZRA has become. But the case of 577 kwacha didn't seem to have fallen off the system. I got this person calling me using an anonymous number and asking me about 507 kwacha. I was like, what are you talking about? So anyway, cut the long story short. Why should somebody be calling you over a small amount of money when they are owing serious amounts of money walking down the streets freely? People are wearing their taxes. They're not filing in returns. So I think the regulator has to prioritize where they're going to get them. They have to see, okay, this is the segment we're going to follow. Is it politicians whose books we're going to ask? Is it big companies whose books we're going to be looking at? And go after those. They should be going to Kalingalinga and convince those people that are selling on the market that they have to be as taxpayers and not following 500 questions, bringing up from that and making phone calls.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So, but before we tackle a little bit of whatever little Finance Minister Chikwanda talked about in the budget, let's look at this mine value-added tax returns controversy. How do the mines pay value-added tax? And can you also address this issue, the controversy of the VAT returns being the government owes the mines? How did that come about?
Okay, yeah. It's a very interesting discussion on, you know, the returns. I think I said a little earlier that value-added tax is a consumption tax. So there
yes.
is the input part and the output part, yeah. So at the point of, let's give an example, if a mine is, or if a company is importing, I'm sorry, those are forks and knives in the background. If they're importing something that they have to use in the production of whatever they have to produce, they will pay input tax, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And if they have to export, then output tax automatically comes into play. The only time that the revenue house will be able to make a claim is when the export or the output tax is more than the input tax. The problem that has been there is that the input tax has always been more or has always been declared to be more than the output tax. But the law currently says that you have to claim your input tax. So there are two people on this side of the argument. There are those that are saying, no, you know, because we can't even verify if this is the correct amount that these things are being exported at, and if these things that are being exported are being underpriced, then it means that, you know, we're not, you know, having the right amount of output tax being declared, which could be true. So I think really the big issue that we have is the revenue house has to put its house in order with regard to making a number of verifications. And I think on the other hand, the people that are claiming input VAT have to be honest enough. There have been cases where, you know, a particular kind of item that is being imported from, say, South Africa is priced at a much higher price than you would get it locally from a local supplier. So then if it's being priced 10 times the amount, that person will still claim input VAT.
Yes.
So I think the issue of tax has become a moral issue. Are people declaring right things? Are they declaring right values for their inputs? Are they declaring right values for their outputs? And as long as we do not have a person or a system in place that makes us to be able to determine what output is and what is being exported is, then we're still going to lose this battle. And as long as the law is as it is, what would be an ideal situation would be to look at the whole law as it is, look at the proposed changes that we have to make to it. Yes, people that are coming in to run businesses, the ultimate goal is to make profit. But then if the ultimate goal is just to make profit and rip the country off, then I don't think those are the right people that we should be having as investors. I think 50 years down, it's really a sorry sight in a whole lot of these places. I think I've talked about this before. So we have to be able to reach a point where we can be able to make rules, not rules to punish people, but rules that are going to be able to help people to comply.
Uh-huh.
It comes back to morality. You make good rules and you hope people are going to comply, people still find a way of running away and not paying the taxes. So it's a little complicated. I hope that there's going to be a solution very soon on this, VAT. I haven't looked at the full budget speech that has been given. I haven't analyzed it yet, but I hope that we're going to get somewhere soon, sooner than later.
Okay, excellent. Let's, whatever you have heard or you've looked at, whatever little you have read, what's your overview of the Zambian speech budget that was given today by Honorable Chikwanda? And specifically, what things did he address concerning tax issues?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I think the introductory is very nice, bittersweet, interesting. Yeah. Kind of gives some hope. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's trying to go through. Addressed my teacher a little earlier. Yeah.
while you are going through, I'll just bring your attention back to when you talked about the payroll tax, the pay as you earn, and you said something like the first 3,000. Quite as what is paid, or that was it? The first 3%.
It's the first 3,000 is tax free. So what that means effectively is, if I am working and I'm getting paid 3,000 kwacha, then I'm not going to pay any tax.
So I listened to part of the speech, and I hope I captured this.
Ah, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So in reference to that, and I hope I caught this correctly, but he said a total of 5% of the budget will go to income. A total percent of income taxes will be used to ensure quality of to ensure equity and transportation for the private sector reforms. So is there a relationship between what I asked and the quote that I got?
I'm trying to be a little careful as I answer questions around the budget, because I haven't really done a detailed analysis. I've got a copy, but I haven't done a detailed analysis of it. So yeah. I would be a little hesitant on picking questions around the budget right now. Yeah, I think so. I think it's safer that way. So I don't say something that is not right.
Okay.
Maybe let's let's do this. The budget issue, obviously, the issue And apparently, I'm told he didn't really say anything on taxes. I'm also, as I'm talking to you, as we are discussing here, I'm trying to look at the copy you sent me. And I agree with you, somebody.
You finally got it.
Yeah, I got it. This thing requires for somebody to read through it and sort of, let's go back to the taxes and sort of reflect on some things that affect people directly after. In my opinion, I mean, and I really don't care what people think, I'm free to say whatever I want. It's a free world. after all, I live in America.
Mm-hmm.
Budgets are just political speeches or statements like a manifesto, which I really don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about it later. Let's go back to the mining companies and the VAT issue. Is it right for the companies, Glencore in particular, to take the position they are taking to say they are going to lay off people because until the government gives them a refund? What is being done about that?
Yeah. Mopani. Well, if you look at the total tax contribution for 2013, 95% of the total tax coming from mining companies came from state quantum minerals.
Mm-hmm.
And that represented 12.5% of the total revenue of the country. The output of First Quantum Minerals was a third of the total output that was, stated as having been produced by the mining companies. Now, the question is, if First Minerals only produced a third and they contributed 95% of the total tax coming from the mining sector, then why did the other players in the sector only contribute 5%, and yet those other players, Mopani included, accounted for 2/3 of the production? Yeah. So unless we find a person, or unless we find somebody to answer this question for us, we should shut up whoever is trying to suggest anything that does not make sense. I think we need to have enough courage to do that, because it just does not make sense. It's not rocket science. You produce a third of the total output and you pay 95% of the total tax. And others produce 2/3 and they account for 5% of the total tax. There's something wrong here. And it's a pity that this same thing that is wrong is the one that is now in the forefront and saying that they're going to lay off people, they're going to do this, they're going to do what, because, you know, the government is not doing this. It's not right. Where are they getting their power to do that? That's what we should ask ourselves.
That's,
I think we need to be courageous enough to table things, put things on the table. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have briefly looked at the budget now for 2015, and I have seen that it has... increased tremendously. Just to give an overview, I think 2010 we had the budget of 16,717,800,000. 2011 that went up to 20,537,400,000. It's been rising steadily. 2012 it was 27,698,000. 2013 it went up to 32 billion. 2014, it was 2 billion, and now we have 46 billion. We see a rise of about 4.5 or 4.3 billion kwacha. I think this is very good that the domestic financing, you know, continues to go up at 75.2% being domestic resources, and only 1.2 billion, 2.6% of the budget being complemented. I think this is good, and I think this could even be better, just like the minister said that we could do even better. Because after 50 years, I think we expect to have basic systems in place that would be able to get us to a certain level. It would be good if we got to a point where, you know, the aid budget gets to zero. But if the aid budget gets to zero, are we going to make sure that people are getting the services that they're supposed to be getting, for example, in rural areas? I think it's a good indication that we're slowly, winning ourselves off as a country from aid. But it's very important that this really is supported strongly by, you know, the Revenue House, Zambia Revenue Authority, being able to collect a lot more money and collecting money from where it should be collected and not following up people that,
Yeah, what we can do is we can reflect on the budget and probably talk about it again. I'm sure, knowing the way things are back home, the next few days or weeks, everything on national media there is just going to be talking about the budget. I know that. We'll try to do that. In the few minutes remaining, Sombo, could you talk about value-added tax rule 18? What in the world is that? What does it mean? What is that rule about?
Okay. I'm going to put my notes away around around rule 18. So let me just read them up. I do have them. I think I do have. Okay. Let me.
Maybe I should have warned
you. I'm on holiday, huh? I'm on holiday. You're making my head go round.
The work ethic, Sombo, we have discovered is there's no resting. You work even on holiday.
I like that. Yeah.
What is Rule 18 in the simplest terms you can put it? We have about, 8 minutes remaining here. Just in the simplest terms you can put it.
Okay, let me briefly talk about this. I think there was an amendment that was passed on the 9th of January 2013 by the Commissioner General. And it's basically a requirement of, certain measures to be put in place for a claim can be made. I think what the mining companies and the manufacturing companies and those in the agriculture sector are not happy with, it's the requirements that have been put forth, which I think in their view seem to be burdensome. And I could read some of the requirements here. The first one says that copies of export documents for the goods bearing a certificate of shipment provided by the authority. I don't think copies of export documentation should be had for the people that are claiming tax to obtain, because if they're the ones that are exporting, they should have the right documentation in place for them to be able to carry out the export. And in the event of the input tax, there has to be copies of import documents for the goods bearing a certificate of importation into the country of destination provided by the customs authority of that country. This should also fairly be easy, to get a hold of. There has to be tax in the goods exported, and there has to be proof of payment made by the customer for the goods. There has to be documentary evidence providing that payment for the goods has been made by the customer into the exporter's bank account in Zambia. And there has to be such other documentary evidence as authorized officer may reasonably require. What I think really is the issue is that do we know where the copper is exported to? For example, if I had to give an example of mining companies. If we do not know which the final destination of the copper is, then it makes it very hard to get, this documentation that is needed for the place where these goods are going to. So if I think the way the system is, there's quite a number of middlemen into play, and as long as those middlemen are there, then it makes it very hard to obtain certain kind of documentation. So maybe that is where the contention is, but I think it's the requirement that these rules are fulfilled. That's the whole reason why there's been this outcry. This is very interesting, yeah? you know, because it just shows you that a lot not right. Yeah, it shows you that a lot of things are not right. I really think that it wouldn't be that hard to obtain export documentation, would it be? Of course, the argument would be that this is a waste of time. You know, when we're selling this copper, we don't even know who the other third and fourth buyer is going to be, then it makes it very difficult. The issue of the destination, I think that becomes very tricky, you know. Copies of import documents for the goods bearing a certificate of importation into the country of destination, that's a little rough, huh? Yeah, if there are lots of middlemen in the process, it makes it very hard. Yeah.
Like you have said, this whole issue to do with the so-called, that's what I call them, so-called investors and tax issues in Zambia, it's all a moral issue. If people just need to learn to say they are dealing with the livelihood of people in a country that is not as rich as where they are coming from. But then again, greedy people don't see things that way. Now, what would be your, this will be the final question and we conclude here. We appreciate you taking the time out of your vacation to talk to us. We shall pick up the conversation as we go along. In 2 minutes, what would be your advice to the Zambians living abroad and what tax issues should they pay attention to?
What tax issues should they pay attention to? I think the most important thing is to know what, you know, the tax liabilities would, they would have to meet when they are coming back to avoid any problems. What the Zambia Revenue Authority do every year is they produce a tax guide, and for a number of taxes, like for VAT, they have a VAT guide. And so I think it would be very important. And their website, by the way, is also regularly updated. So it would be to, you know, just be aware of the new changes that are being introduced with regard to property tax for those that want to, you know, transfer some property or sell off property, but then also to know what kind of duties they have to pay if you have to come to the country and what kind of documentation you have to keep in place for you to prove you've been away for a while. Yeah, so that, you know, there are no cases of being harassed when you get here. Yeah. But then also, I know that there's a number of people out of the country who have a lot of have property here back home. To also encourage the people, the tenants in the houses that you're renting out, to remit the 10%, the rent tax to the government. Because I think it's one issue for the revenue house not to have the capacity to collect the revenue, but it's another thing for a person to voluntarily remit it. So I think as much as possible, it would be good that people should voluntarily register with the revenue authority and pay the 10% tax which they have to pay. Yeah.
Excellent. Sombo, we thank you for taking the time, and please enjoy your vacation. We'll still be calling on you when we have all read through the budget speech. I'm just looking at it. This thing is like, what, 24 pages? Oh, my goodness.
Yes. It's
everybody,
long.
It is long. Enjoy your vacation. I thank my colleague Matilda for helping out with the background work and for hosting. Please join us tomorrow, Saturday, for our regular broadcasting. I am continuing with my special feature of Zambia Jubilee of personalities and organizations who contributed to the struggle for independence. Tomorrow, I'll be talking to Ravi Devali. I don't know how many people even know that family, who was sponsoring the struggle for independence behind the scenes, and they didn't even hold any political office. Thank you, Tombo, again, and everybody enjoy your weekend. We'll catch you tomorrow at 8 a.m. Central and 1500 hours Zambian time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Taeza talema na yuma pempelo Atika pena siku lina Azati kumbukila oye Chifu kwa lelo Bantu bonse basoweza ulemu Atate imwe mama Ayelele mama
Taliban.